Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Drunk women solving crime.
Drunk women.
Drunk women solving crime.
Is Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Katie Wilkins and I'm an author and comedian. I'm joined by screenwriter Hannah George.
Hello.
And writer-comedian Taylor Glenn.
Hello.
This is where brandy meets bludgeoning, mimosa meets misdemeanor, and port meets prostitution. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime.
That is a sweet burn. I love it.
It's evidence.
For the listeners, our producer has just had to crank the volume down.
If anything, this is now an anti-joke.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Welcome to another episode of Drunk Women Solving Crime. We are joined by the fantastic comedian, writer and actress, it's Brenda Gilhooley!
Brenda!
Thank you! Hello everyone! Lovely to be here.
Yay! Thank you for joining us. We have one question. Have you ever been the victim of a crime?
Well, quite a few, I think. Well, I thought this was a crime, but I'm not sure that officially it is, but I think it should be.
Okay.
Because, I remember, this is quite a while ago, my daughter was she was about 10 or 11, still at primary school.
Okay.
And at the weekend, she'd had some friends over, and I just got this new MacBook.
Okay.
And she and her friends asked to borrow it, and they were upstairs in her bedroom and whatever. Anyway, on the Monday morning, I'm a real technophobe. I'm terrible. I don't know how to use it.
Had a MacBook.
Well, I had a MacBook, but I do kind of just, it's sort of cut and paste and type emails, and that's about it. Anyway, I was typing away, and at the bottom, things bounce, don't they?
Like iTunes. To get your attention.
And it was really annoying me, and I didn't know what it was, and I was a bit scared to touch it, but it was really annoying me. So in the end, I just went, like that. And then this man appeared.
Oh, my God.
Ooh. Yeah. And then next to him, all these messages saying, would you like to see my penis?
Oh, no.
You know, are you hot for it? I mean, I can't, honestly. And my immediate thought, an absolute panic sort of mum mode was, yeah. My daughter and her friends were targeted over the weekend by a paedophile. Yeah. And I just thought, you know, why would this man appear?
How has he got
on my screen like this? So then I was just listening to all the, reading all these messages, and I was thinking, oh my God, this man has targeted my daughter.
Yeah.
So I thought, I don't know what to do. And then something else started bouncing at the bottom. So I thought, in a panic, I just pressed that. And it put me immediately into vision.
Oh, no.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
this is my favourite story that we've had. And then suddenly you're calling him.
I didn't know. I was immediately... And then I put myself into vision. And then he immediately started masturbating.
Oh, my. Really? Yes. Oh, it's crazy. This is crazy.
Yeah. So then...
And then he could see your own face, like, horrified.
Yeah. And it didn't seem to put him off at all.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Because then I thought, what do I do? So I had my mobile. And I sort of stood up, and then I just started taking low. So he had this tracksuit on, but by this point, the tracksuit bottom was right down, and he was just masturbating. So I started taking close-up pictures, loads of them, of his penis. Thinking it's evidence. I was going like that on my phone. Taking loads of pictures of his penis and then pictures of him and his face and then pictures of the messages.
Right.
You know, would you like to see my penis and all this sort of stuff?
If you only you'd known about screenshotting. Like, do you know what I mean? All it is like Control-Alt-3. That's all you need on
that. Honestly, I wouldn't know anything. So I didn't know how he'd come up. I didn't know how I'd put myself. And then it didn't seem to put him off. There he was carrying on, you know. Anyway, in the end, I just went press, shut it down. And I rang the police, right? So I had all these photos on my phone. And I rang the police. And I said, I think my daughters, I mean, this has never happened on my computer of mine before. The girls were up there in her bedroom at the weekend. So they said, oh, look, we're coming round. And in the meantime, I then rang the school that took it really, really seriously. Yeah. And I said, look, I've got to tell you this. This has happened, and I think the girls might... They're all at the same school. And anyway, the police came round, I said, I've got all the photos, I've got all the evidence you need, and all this. And they... And I said, I think, you know... So they looked into the history of my...
Okay.
Which I wouldn't be allowed to do. I would do now. I have learned a few things. But at the time, I didn't know. And they went... And I said, have they been targeted? Did he talk to them at the weekend? And they went, no. They went on a Lush website for bath bombs.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so pure. That's so sweet.
Disney site about the latest films. And what was the other thing that they... What was the other... And Brandy Melville or something like that. And then they talked to Imogen and... a couple of the other girls, they hadn't, right? So I said, what's going on? And I was sure two blokes and a... So I said, look, it's his penis, I've got all the evidence. And they said, well, look, to be honest, it is just a man, a random man...
Trying.
You can put yourself... I don't even know how it works, but you put yourself... I mean, this must be about a sort of decade ago or something, but you put yourself... out there on the internet.
Or like available or whatever.
Yeah, and you wait to see who's up for it.
Wow.
So he said the interaction you've had with him has been entirely consensual. And so it's not a crime in any way.
Well, at what point did you consent to it? I don't think that's entirely consensual.
Just see his penis and masturbating.
Hitting buttons is not consent.
No,
That's right.
Wow. So there was no crime.
Yeah. Wow. Like, you answered your phone, therefore you could... What's the word I'm trying to say?
Consented.
Yeah. Answering your phone is not consent.
No. So anyway, then I had to go up to the school and go, oh no, it was consensual.
It turns out I consented and I just forgot. Yeah.
But the worst thing was that then anyway, that went by and a few weeks went by and I was at this dinner party and I said, oh, I went to, I don't know, Verona or somewhere to somebody and they'd been to, and I said, I've got pictures. And I'm going, I must tell you what really happened there. And I was talking to this woman I'd never met before.
No.
Oh, that's brilliant. So funny.
So I thought, so that's my crime story.
My phone was there.
Yeah. Because it wasn't a crime, apparently.
Yeah. Wow.
But I thought it was. And I think I'm quite right to think
it. No, you are correct.
Yeah, I feel like that's
and
correct.
And I hope that if that happened now, that would be considered a crime.
Yeah.
They must have slightly better, because that feels like it was the equivalent. It was a decade ago. Yeah. It was like the equivalent of whatever Messenger was. But the people had open access in a way that they wouldn't now.
It's, yeah.
I guess.
I mean, I think maybe things, I mean.
No. Just the fact that your camera was on.
Yeah.
Like,
and that was pre sort of Tinder, I'm 5 minutes away.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think maybe attitudes have changed a bit.
Like they've diversified. Like the people that want to do that are now on Tinder.
Yeah, and they know where to go and who really does want to do it. Yes.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's disgusting. What was the website? it's still around.
Well, look at my history.
There's just something really adorable too about how it was bouncing and that was just bothering you. Yeah. I don't know. Just
I can't work like this. Yeah. Oh, I'll have to press it. I put myself
in there. I'm in the map.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
See, also I like to think that, you know, there's more, people have been campaigning to kind of try and legislate against these kinds of cyber sex criminals. Mm. So we always ask on this podcast, if you had the perp now, what would you say to them? What would you say to that horrible wanking man?
Yeah, well, I'd say I don't want to see your penis. I mean, I said to the police, can we get him? Can we find him?
Yeah.
And the police said, look, it could be anywhere in the world because it's the internet. Mm. So we can't go looking for him anyway, even if we wanted to.
So this was before IP addresses stuff. Yeah. I feel like they could have fucking found him.
Yeah, right.
Oh, boy.
He's traceable.
Yeah.
Well, I would say you're a creep, really.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Spot on.
Put it away. How old was he?
He was about 30.
Okay.
You can tell by like the rings on their penis, right?
Now it's time for drunk women solving crime.
Now, actually, this isn't much of a segue. But, if you wanted to, you could view this story as a love story.
That's a terrible segue from what we just heard.
Like my brief relationship.
Yeah. Unlike that story. No, there's going to be some good actual consent in this. And that's what your wife said to me in the shower this morning. I'm going to try and make it, to try and get that into every episode.
Every episode, yeah. We should.
But I'm going to commit to it.
Catchphrase takes commitment.
So I'm going to start off this case by telling you guys about Edith Lanchester. Now, she was a young feminist and socialist, and she decided that she was going to just live with her lover, James Sullivan, without getting married. So my first question is, what year do you think this is?
And this ruffled feathers, I take it.
Yeah.
This is a big deal.
Well, George Eliot did that, didn't she?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She lived with her partner.
Yes.
And what year was that?
Well, that was, oh my God, I am an English student and I don't even know. I think that would be 1800 and something.
Okay. Whatever year, it's disgusting.
Mid-1800s.
And in 2 weeks,
you'll no longer be disgusting.
We are literally sitting in Hannah's whorehouse right now.
Living in sin, Hannah.
I am living in sin. Welcome to the sin bin. We're recording this at my flat and Toby has just popped in with a screwdriver and fixed the stand. Sounds like a porno, doesn't it? Yeah. So living in sin. Okay. I'm going to go 1912.
Nice.
It's been a while.
Well, I would say 1890.
Okay.
I'm going to go a little later just to be a little different and say 1927.
In that case, Brenda gets it.
Ooh.
It was 1895.
Wow.
Okay.
All right. So Edith was born in Hove in 1871. She was the fifth child of a family of eight, and her dad, Henry Lanchester, was an established architect. So three of Edith's brothers also became successful architects. And one of my sources described them as having bourgeois success.
Uh-huh.
And I cannot tell if that is a burn in this context. but they're a fancy, snooty pants family, or at least they think they are, or they want to be, or whatever. Now, Edith goes to college and she works as a teacher for a little bit. And then she gets a job as a clerk secretary working for a firm in the City of London. And she discovers new things in that London.
Ooh.
Question. We all have. What new things does Edith get interested in around this time?
Oh, wow.
I remember...
Suffragette movement.
Oh, that's a good answer.
Oh, Kate's written that one down. I feel like that one's a good one.
I can't always remember what everyone says.
I love it. I remember when I first moved to London, I discovered Uber, and that was quite exciting. But I did not discover that you're not supposed to sit in the front of an Uber for about 2 or 3 months. So I was just like, it's not my dad was taking me around.
The whole journey.
Yeah, just off to netball practice.
It's like, oh, look, I've picked up that friendly girl again.
Yeah.
The other way around, he'll want you to stop talking.
Yeah,
you've got a really low Uber score, haven't you?
Oh yeah, I mean it's below zero. I waited for an Uber driver to literally move his things from the seat before I got in once. So real shame, real shame.
If he's back.
I didn't know the etiquette. So
that's
I think.
So funny. I was just like, what?
Literally, and then one of my like go-to questions.
My sandwich was in there, bitch. What if I get hungry?
One of my go-to questions with the Uber drivers was always like, "Many people been sick in here?" That was always my question. No. I don't know why. I just thought they might have a fun story.
Gets in the front, and now she wants a Graham Norton story.
I know.
Like the most.
How are you the daughter of a taxi driver?
Right? It should be the code, the taxi code. I should know it. So what I'm saying is maybe it was something exciting that she got wrong.
Okay, lovely. I mean. Lovely answer.
I'm going to go with uncircumcised penises because that's what really struck me.
That's what happened. Are you saying that's what happened to you when you got to London?
Yes. Right away.
At the airport.
Not like the Heathrow Express or anything. But,
It's a lot for an American girl to learn to navigate. All right?
Sure. I've seen that scene in Bad Mums. The hoodie.
That is everything about that subject. Again, I'm gonna give it to Detective Gilhooly.
I'm shocked it's not mine, but
she got involved in socialism. So by 1895, she was a suffragette as well.
Yeah.
And she joined she's a confirmed socialist member of the Social Democratic Federation, the SDF. In 1897, she became secretary to Eleanor Marx, who was a feminist and social campaigner, and also she was the youngest daughter of Karl Marx.
I was going to say, is it Marx?
Oh, okay.
Blimey.
Wow.
That one.
It would suck if you were in that political realm and you weren't related.
Yeah.
Oh my God, no.
No, it's actually Marx and Spencer. Karl Marx and Spencer would be good.
And just trying to really like trade on it and like died out on, oh, sorry, it's your mistake. I never said.
Great capitalist enterprise.
Yeah.
There's a sketch in that, I'm sure. Karl Marx and Spencer.
Yes.
This is not just equality.
Also, I love the fact that you, back in the day, you'd have to move from Brighton and Hove to London to become like a socialist. Like,
yeah.
In terms of like, you know, Brighton
is
so like.
I think you're a bit provincial, but you know. Is it the same now? I don't think so.
Yeah, that's a good
point. So she's working for Karl Marx's daughter.
Yeah, the one that was born in the UK. And
was she hot? Just wondering. It's relevant to the case, Your Honour. No, good for her for having interests.
Yeah, yeah, little hobby.
Must have a hobby.
So it was actually through her membership of the Battersea branch of the SDF that she met factory worker and fellow member James Sullivan. That's love a boy.
Oh, and also so many dogs in the Battersea branch.
Is that what you think of immediately when you hear Battersea?
Yeah, just dogs everywhere.
I do too. Wow. Great branding on their
part. I live quite near Battersea, so I don't think dogs.
I just think I'm going home. Yeah. I imagine you get like off the tube or whatever and there's just dogs everywhere. I've never been and I won't go. I refuse to go.
There's a tube now, you know, directly to Battersea.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Give it a go. But it's full of dogs. But anyway.
Yeah.
Better be.
Getting up on the seats. Oh boy, that.
Yeah, it's like a cat cafe of a trains. Yeah. But with dogs. So his nickname was Seamus, her nickname was Biddy. They've both got a nickname. It's very cute. So in 1895, Edith announces that she's going to live with James Sullivan, Seamus to his mates, starting on the 26th of October.
They set a date.
It's very romantic, isn't it?
Yeah, she was in lodgings before. Now, in the phraseology of the day, this was known as housekeeping. So
to cohabit?
Yeah,
or was known as housekeeping?
Yes.
Huh.
So I'm
strange.
Yeah. Because I guess
that's just your cover. I'm just cleaning.
Yeah.
I think it is some kind of weird euphemism, or I don't
know. Maybe.
Now, my next question is, how does Edith's father, Henry Lanchester, react to this news, her little announcement?
Well, he is an architect of fear. So I'm quite worried for her. Because I think if she's moved away to sort of discover
to
politics and stuff, you kind of feel like she maybe doesn't share her politics with her family.
Sure.
So I don't think this goes down well with
okay.
Papa.
Okay, yep. Wonderful.
I can't imagine it went down well.
Yeah, okay.
So just to contrast, I'm going to say he was very supportive. Threw them a housekeeping party.
He was appalled.
Oh, wow.
He found it intolerable. So what he did was he turned up at her house. So the day before, so she's going to do this big move on the 26th. So he turns up on the 25th while she's still eating breakfast. He turns up with three of her brothers, his sons, and he also brought with him one of the country's leading mental health experts.
Oh no! So she's mad.
That's
oh my god.
Yep.
That's crazy.
So he brings this guy, Dr. George Fielding Blandford. So he turns up with this weird entourage, and I'm paraphrasing, but he basically says, yeah, so not happy about this, that you actually have to get married, please. And she's like, you are really ruining moving day. And like, no, thank you. And she does, she's got this very political stance. So I am paraphrasing, but she says, no. Actually, there is a quote. Now I don't know what's real and what I wrote down properly, but she basically says, I would lose my independence if I got married. So,
yeah.
Because that is literally the law, like no bank account.
Exactly.
Yeah, because, she wouldn't, I mean, she would be, do anything once she's
exactly.
married.
Can I ask it's probably a very silly question, but at that time in the UK, what is driving that belief about marriage? Was it religious? Was it more just cultural, social, that a woman shouldn't... Do you know what I mean? Because in the States, I always associate that with, like, strong religiosity. I always say religiosity.
It does feel like it could be like a mixture of religiosity and...
Well, what's driving that women have to get married, or what's driving that they no longer want to?
No, I get that one. we're all on board with that one. No, literally just the other thing. Like what was driving that sort of conservatism about... Was it about, well, a woman is property? Maybe it's all of the above.
Yeah, no, it's just, I mean...
Just because I never think of any other country as religious as the US is. Do you know what I mean in that regard? And the Church of England, I always think of as sort of like, meh.
I think that in this... We're talking like 1895, so it was still very religious in the UK.
Okay. That's why it's sort of a silly question, but I just wanted to...
But it's the patriarchy.
I would say it's all of that. Religiosity and culture. Also class as well. I think people wanting to make sure people are married into the right classes if they have more control over that.
Like, that's how society is built. So you've got to play that game and try and marry well. Otherwise, you've got no pension.
Women couldn't vote then. Well, when women got the vote, it was married women, wasn't it?
Yes, they got it first. That's right. First. Or you had to be 30. Was there an age difference?
I think you had to be 30. I think there was.
How old did men have to be?
I'm not sure.
Three.
Yeah. As a boy, you just have to be old enough to do an X.
Like, and that you can do anything. You're a genius.
Yeah.
You could be prime minister.
Queen party. So you guys...
That was my political toddler. Thank you.
Tidy up time.
I think we should be hearing a lot more from Taylor's political toddler in upcoming episodes.
That's a whole other podcast. Political toddler.
We cycle? He's got my vote.
Carry on.
Okay, so you guys have already I can sense have worked out what's about to happen. So what happens next has the possibility of amazing you, but will it?
Yeah.
She was pronounced mad at the scene.
Oh no, it's really, honestly, it's awful.
Don't worry, Dr. Blanford can back up this diagnosis. I have a quote from him here. He said, "If she had said that she contemplated suicide, a certificate might have been signed without question. I was equally justified in signing one when she expressed her determination to commit this social suicide, because it's therefore evidence of irrationality."
Wow. So, join the Methodists to social suicide. I didn't know social suicide was a thing in 1895.
I know that is a snazzy term for back then, isn't it?
Yeah.
So well done, Dr. Blanford.
Does he have a point? Is it? I mean, if it's insane to commit social suicide, that does explain a lot of my childhood, to be fair.
But you're just a doctor at that time. You're just paying them to put somebody away, and they just have to go through the paperwork. Yeah. So
yes.
He was ready with his little eloquent statement before any of this happened.
He's come prepared.
Yeah, it's unbelievable to think that they did just put women away because they had an opinion about their own life.
Yes, that can be. And also, because I think obviously there are certain behaviours that might indicate that somebody did need help with something, but like happily getting on with your life isn't one of those things. Yeah. So Edith is very cross about this. She's like, you can't just call me. I'm paraphrasing again because I couldn't make it all quotes. Yeah. She's like, you can't call me mad.
Hey, motherfuckers!
Get out of my house, motherfuckers! So they start trying to capture her. She resists and tries to fight back. So her dad handcuffs her.
That's going to make it so much worse.
Oh my God!
And one of her brothers assaulted Mrs. Gray, who was her landlady.
Wow.
Yeah.
So these are mean architects.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow.
We thought they might be a bit, you know, liberal and modern.
Yeah.
And
it's kind of, you know, one of the aspirational ones now.
Yeah.
No, these are bad architects.
Wow.
Question, where is Edith taken?
Oh, an asylum, like, maybe.
Yeah, to the
like
to
a specific.
Asylum.
You want a specific
you know what? Asylum?
Asylum covers it. I accept asylum. No further questions. It is asylum. Yeah. But they bundle her in a carriage and they take her to the Priory Hospital in Roehampton, which was at the time a private lunatic asylum. I cannot wait to ask you this question. I can already feel how angry you're going to be. But my question is, what was recorded on the certificate as the supposed cause of her insanity?
Oh, my God.
Oh, so many choices. So many choices.
Promiscuity.
Immorality.
Immorality.
Are we naming saints?
Girls, I think.
St. Jude. I come from an Irish Catholic family, and St. Jude, my auntie once said to me over a breakup with a boy, and I was like destitutely and sad and all that. She said, "I'm praying to St. Jude for you." And I said, "Oh, well, thanks very much." Who's St. Jude? And so she said, "The patron saint of hopeless cases." There is a patron saint of hopeless cases, and it is St. Jude.
All right.
Wow. That is a sweet burn. I love it.
So thank you very much, Auntie Lily.
Yeah, thanks for that.
You give with one hand.
I feel so much better now.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Drunk women solving crime.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hysteria.
Nice. They wrote on the certificate that the supposed cause of her insanity was over-education.
Oh my god!
For the listeners, our producer has just had to crank the volume down.
Wow.
Yeah, that really is infuriating.
Wow.
And the thing is, you may recognise that accusation from such things as all the far-right memes we have today. So it's like,
oh boy,
not even over that particular battle. But yeah.
Holy shit.
Holy shit.
To say she's overly educated suggests that she's right. Right? Do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yes. There's an
she's
admission
worked it
of,
out.
Yeah.
She's too clever for our lives.
It's very much so admitting to stopped. The entire system that, oh yeah, we're just keeping people ignorant for our own.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even pretending.
We need her dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that actually almost is a policy. Of, you know, I was even saying that the other day. I was saying, you know, those elections. I said, why would everybody up north vote Tory?
Mm.
And I said, you know, I come from a working class background. I wouldn't vote against my own interests. But all that Brexit and racism, all that stuff, you know, it's encouraged.
Just,
you sort of think it is better to keep people ignorant. And you can get the powers that be can get what they want.
It is, that's why they're underfunding.
Sorry,
everything.
I didn't mean to get
no,
sorry.
No,
but it's true.
But you're absolutely right. It's in their interest.
Yeah. Yeah. It's why they don't like teach politics in schools as a thing. Like, we never learn about politics.
No.
Not once.
No.
You know, we did within the context of other sort of subjects. But politics, yeah, it should be taught in every school.
It's there's been much more civil engagement and analytical thinking and all of these
things. Well, in the guise of neutrality is such bullshit because everything is political. So it's all
Yes.
how you're teaching it.
Yes.
So there's politics and everything. If you're teaching history, you're teaching politics.
Yeah.
So pretending that, like, no, we don't touch that. It's like, no, you are. You very much touching
you're
it.
You're just denying it.
Mm. Anyway.
God,
so
really
they were,
are
they,
the
I mean, they
things.
Were really kind of outlining their own policy.
Yes.
Was keep women down and don't educate them because they might want to do something with their lives.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They've admitted their dastardly scheme in the... They've revealed their hand with their insult. So, this Dr. Blandford diagnosed Edith as suffering from a specific monomania related to her attitude to marriage. And I had to look this up. Monomania is, I'm sure you guys already knew, but it's a obsessive enthusiasm or preoccupation with one thing. So they're saying she's obsessed to the point of distraction with this whole marriage issue.
So I have monomania about the Titanic.
Yes.
It's good to have a name for it. It's good
but
to have a name for it.
Even that is like...
You feel better now you know what it is.
I do, actually.
Yeah. Until you die. Diagnosed, it can be really
nice.
Yeah,
but it's like what's funny about that too is that was she didn't want to talk about it. She was perfectly happy with her choice. They're making her talk about marriage.
Exactly.
What do you think about marriage? Why are you still talking about marriage?
Yes. Oh, I tried to write a joke here, but it doesn't work.
Give it a go. It might work. Give it a go.
Come on, we'll workshop it. Let's do this.
Okay. Well, oh no, sorry. Let me just quickly tell you this. Because this is a fact that isn't a joke, but now maybe the joke will be a surprise. this is an era where there's a huge uptick in people there's a huge uptick in asylums. There's a huge uptick in Victorians trying to look after people with mental health issues, and it was a lot of it was about vigorous walks and fresh air,
mm-hmm.
and not all of it was about that though. So, but there's this health conscious, we need to look after vulnerable people thing. So there's loads more asylums, but there's a huge uptick in people putting their relatives in asylums to try and steal their fortunes. So there's a real pipeline to asylum increase. So people are just starting to abuse the new discoveries in mental health. See if you can spot this one.
I just pictured a t-shirt with it. Oh, sorry.
No, I was going to do my joke.
No, I fucked up your joke.
No, you haven't. You go and then...
This joke has got to work now.
If anything, it hadn't been signposted enough. So.
go on, no, you do your thing. No, you go.
All right.
Go for it.
Female workplace. This
is, if anything, this is now an anti-joke. And in the end, the frog dies of it. Yeah. The irony is men would rather kidnap their daughters and force them to go to therapy than go to therapy.
I like it. Well, it's not even a joke, it's just a very good point.
I'm just getting in on that meme. Thank you, guys.
It worked.
I enjoyed that workshop experience. That was a real female workplace.
Mine was only a visualization of a t-shirt with an arrow that says, I'm with monomania.
Great. That could be some new merch.
Oh, I love it, because like to me, that person, I'd be like, she's obsessed with me. That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, you need one that says monomania.
Yeah, exactly.
That person can be with you. Right, now, Edith being sectioned against her will causes a scandal. It's on every newspaper. The New York Times report, like, so everyone in the UK is going on about it in the newspapers, and then the New York Times reports that everyone's going on about it in the UK. So it's just like, it just grows the story.
Is that because they're a high-profile family, or did her partner leak a story? Or
Great question. There's a few things that lead into it. So it's the type of story that captures the imagination. It's got, so her not wanting to get married, that's already interesting. Then you've got the weight of the organisation behind her, the socialist people.
Right. Okay.
And then you've got, like her family's like a big enough deal that people
it's
care.
Like the Britney Spears of 1895.
Actually,
isn't
that's
it?
A really good point. Yeah.
Free Edith. Yeah. What's really sad is we have got the Britney Spears in 2021.
Oh my God.
But, you know, yeah.
That's such a good... We're going to come back to that because, oh my God, if we compare and contrast, I don't even know who comes out better. Yeah. Like, but anyway, so everyone's talking about it. Everyone's obsessed. People are upset that she's been put away because obviously people keep being put away for no reason and then they're like, well, that seems crazy.
I could be next, right?
Yeah.
That must cause a bit of a...
Yeah, so everyone's got a comment and a perspective. The MP for Battersea, John Burns, he starts trying to intervene.
MP for dogs, got it.
Yeah.
The Marquis they're everywhere. Don't go there.
The Marquess of Queensbury commended her bravery and wrote to The Standard offering her a cheque of £100 if she would go through with a legal marriage ceremony, and then in quotes, under protest against marriage laws. Now, I don't understand how that's a protest, because that's what they want her to do.
Yeah,
that's
They've
not thought it. The Marquess of
Everyone's
Queensbury
got involved. Who do they think they are? Just people. Can you imagine if this happened to you before your wedding? Yeah, exactly.
You should have held out for £100.
Yeah, like you're a protest. Honestly,
that's
this
very bizarre.
They are. It's her life.
It's crazy, right? But it is like Britney Spears a bit. Like, everyone's got an opinion. So my next question is, what did the Social Democratic Federation, SDF, do with one of their own being incarcerated? What was their...
They'd go in hard.
Okay.
They would contact their local governmental representatives.
Okay.
With strongly worded letters.
So political... contacting.
Well, I like to think they
that's my version of going in hard. Like, they go shut up. Like, they wrote a letter.
They signed a Facebook.
Does everyone had a guess about what the SDF do?
Stand outside Parliament with loads of banners.
Okay, protesting with banners outside Parliament.
Well, I'm going to go then, if you're going like... letters, protests. I'm going to go, they do bomb stuff.
Blow shit
like
up.
They do, yeah.
Okay.
Somebody's got to say blow shit up.
You guys are all along the right track. Again, I think Brenda might technically be the closest. But what they don't do, but what they do is they attempted to rescue her.
Bust her out.
But, they tried to bust her out, but they were not successful. I don't know how hard they really tried. So instead, they just sang the red flag from outside her asylum walls beneath her barred window.
Well, it's nice and everything, but, you know.
Not so helpful.
Wait, they did what under her window? I'm sorry, doing a stupid knock-knock joke.
They sang the red flag.
Oh my God.
Outside her window.
What if she's trying to sleep? Or...
I know. I mean, one of my questions to you guys was going to be, if you're in prison, would you like that? Would that be comforting? Or would it be like, for fuck's sake,
well,
either bust me out or don't?
Yeah, I'd be a bit annoyed, I think.
Yeah.
Like, they've no offence, Katie, but if it was you singing, then It's like, I love your support. You're my best friend. That would be
the worst way I could support anyone.
What is Red Flag? I don't know that as a song. Is it like he says all his...
crying here.
Oh, you know it?
Yeah. I mean, I only know that line, but...
Go on, try do it again.
Well, we'll keep the red flag flying here. It's a socialist song.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like they've made it all about them.
Yeah, isn't that like when you send a photo from a party and you're like, sorry, you're not here. We're having a good time.
I would have sang, here comes the bride. It'd be great.
Yeah.
All dressed in white straight jacket.
So I tell you who is not impressed with the SDF, and that is Eleanor Marks. She felt that there'd been
suspenses.
Yes, the very same. Yeah. She felt there'd been a misogynistic failure of male socialists to support and defend Edith's position, and she also wasn't happy that they failed to recognise the class dimension of the feminist struggle. But you know, lots of people believe in equality until it's time to make the sandwiches, and then it's just easier if somebody else does that for you.
Yeah, completely.
So,
I sound very bitter there, but.
Right? Yeah. Everyone wants to help in theory. So Eleanor Marks is particularly gunning for an SDF member called Ernest Bax. So question, what did he do that was extremely galling?
We have sort of a running thing where Katie just ends up with these cases with people with really interesting names. And there haven't been like crazy ones here, but I've been waiting for like my first.
Ernest Bax. How do you spell that?
B-A-X.
Oh,
yeah,
that's quite unusual.
Yeah, that's quite cool. Yeah. So what did he do to...
Yeah, so while all this is happening and everyone's supposed to be running around, what did he do that was quite galling, that's really annoyed Eleanor Marks?
Oh.
And he's one of the SDF.
He's in the SDF and he should be.
Did he not show up for a protest because it was his wedding day?
Excellent guess.
Did he say, like, we should be focusing on other things, basically? Ooh. Like, trying to take the attention away from...
Okay, love it.
Yeah, it's not about the individual, it's about the collective. Why are we
Excellent
focusing on
guess
this
as
one
well.
Bitch?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, he just said it's all about me, it's not about her.
Okay. You guys are all in the right ballpark. What he did was, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but slut-shaming, basically.
Oh, no.
So he slagged Edith off in public. He was running that mouth of his about her and passing his bourgeois moralistic judgment on her. So slut-shaming.
But he's in the
SDF. But see, it's all supposed to be like, yeah, everyone's equal, men and women are equal, we're all socialists.
But yeah, exactly.
So how do you take the misogyny out of anything?
So he's like a reverse libertarian, whatever that is.
Yeah, well, this is the thing.
It's lazy because it's the sort of go-to way of attacking a woman always.
Yeah.
You know, they said it about Anne Boleyn, they said it about Marie Antoinette, they say it about everyone. It goes back centuries.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to attack a woman, she's a slut.
Yeah.
That's the weapon.
Yeah.
Completely.
Absolutely.
It's lazy, apart from everything else.
Hack as fuck, mate. Hack as fuck.
Exactly. Women have loads of flaws.
I've got millions.
Flaws.
Come on. Look, we're overeducated as well. Don't just focus on our sex lives.
Yeah. Some of us have acne. Get in there.
So what does Eleanor Marks do about this?
It's a shame there was no Twitter. But
yeah.
I guess maybe she kicks him out of the Federation.
Kicks him out of the Federation?
Oh, I guess.
Yeah, I would think so. If she has the power.
The correct answer is...
Or do they all have to vote on it because socialism?
That's democracy.
The correct answer is rap battle. No, it's not.
What?
It's not.
What does that mean?
Oh my god, you delivered that so dry. That was great.
What is that?
Rap battle.
Well, I mean, I'm joking when I say rap battle, but she does challenge him in a public letter to an
open. You know what a rap battle is?
I don't.
Oh, it's when two people. You've never seen 8 Mile?
No.
Well, that's my one white person's frame of reference, so I'm not sure how to go in any lighter.
It's when two people rapping.
Rap battle.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. It just felt a bit out of context.
Were you picturing Christmas Eve? Very frantic Christmas Eve you had in your head.
Rap battle. Well, yes, it's obvious now.
No, I do that
sorry,
all the time. No, not at all. I do that all the time when I'm like, the what now? Whatever your brain does with it.
Well, so she challenged Ernest Bax in a public letter to an open debate on quote unquote the woman question.
Oh, so it really was.
Well, kinda. That's what she wanted to do, but he said no.
Oh.
He declined, saying that he had rhetorical weaknesses. So he obviously knew he would lose, so he opted not to do that. So it's just another day on Twitter, am I right?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I bet he was like, well, I'm Pilates on that day, so I can't. Yeah. Like, he would just...
I'm too busy being awesome that day.
Also, it was your rhetoric that got you here, so how can that be your defense? Yeah. I can't talk.
Well, okay. I can't talk if everyone's watching. I can only do it behind your back. Now, question. How long was Edith Lanchester in the asylum for?
Oh, no.
Oh, the rest of her life. Please don't say that. It's true.
No, there's gonna be a in this story. I don't know what is yet, but right. I'm gonna go with a very modest 8 years.
8 years?
I'm gonna go with like 6 months. I think that she gets out soon.
With all this attention.
Yeah.
That's true.
Hannah is the closest.
Yes. I mean, thank God, really.
And the correct answer is 4 days.
Oh, good. Oh,
wow. Yeah. Wow.
So there's a real good news, bad news thing here now. The good news is it was only 4 days. The bad news is that during those 4 days, Edith was subjected to mental, physical and sexual abuse.
Oh, wow. God,
what a great system. But basically, she would have been in there for longer, but the Lunacy Commissioners, that's what they were called, happened to
come. The Lunacy Commission. Yeah. We listen to the moon. The Lunacy Commission. Stand up, you big buffoon. I had to round it out, I'm sorry.
I mean, if you sang that outside my prison cell.
And that should have had a twigger warning. Oh, there's my toddler again. Twigger.
What do you want to do when you grow up? Be a Lunacy Commission.
Yeah, I'd be really good at this. So they came to inspect the asylum, and under Section 11 of the 1890 Lunacy Act, further incarceration would require another certificate after 7 days. But the Lunacy Commission guys examine her and they find her to be perfectly sane, so they freed her, and she was released under Section 75 of the Lunacy Act. If we've got any...
We're going to be looking into these acts and making sure you got them right.
Any bureaucracy fans in will really appreciate
It's so interesting thinking back to a time like that, though, and there were policies and there were... Do you know what I mean? Like, they were trying to follow...
They were trying to have a protocol. A structure.
Some people cared.
I mean, the Lunacy Act must have changed its name.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like 1950, though. Guys, we need a rebrand.
Yeah. And we're going to call it the Women's Troubles Act.
Yeah. Going with Nut House. Everybody understands it. Nobody's left out.
Yeah. Now everyone's included. Question: what did her dad do next?
Ugh. Of course, because he put her there. So then, if after 4 days he must feel quite humiliated, which is quite. Mm. I worry. Does something? I mean, it's a horrible thing. But does he like kill her?
Okay.
I know that seems so extreme, but like with some of these stories, it's like if you mix humiliation with like misogyny, you've maybe got a dead woman on your hands.
Yeah. I hear you.
Mm.
I hope he builds himself a house that he can't get out of. He's like, oh, I forgot the door and a window. And he's
if only I was overeducated, I'd be able to get out of this house.
Occupational hazard.
He builds her a nice house as an apology.
Oh, I like
Except for I don't think that's
likely. That's a lovely
that house. Sorry.
He's learned the error of his way.
I do like that. When the first person to answer goes too dark, everyone has to be like, oh, house! Nice house!
Yeah, it ended really well. They had a party. They had a housekeeping party.
And there were rainbows.
And a warming party.
Does he double down and try to bring legal charges, or like does he try to go another route to take her down?
Excellent guess. Closer to that, but not as bad. Don't worry, guys. What he does is he writes a letter to the Times justifying his actions, stating that she was not of sound mind due to the effects of overstudy. So he just carries on banging that drum.
Oh. And then no one read it because nobody wants a subscription.
Right. The paywall has really ruined
it. 5 minutes for free.
Yeah.
And then the Paywallian committee. Yeah.
You can get like, two paragraphs into an article and then you think, oh, well, I'm not paying.
Exactly. It's not worth it. So he couldn't do much more than that. Mm. So Edith never saw him again. She was estranged from all of her family, though she did reconnect with her mother before she died, who left her £400. So, anyway, Edith gets out.
Wow, you could get married four times for that.
Hey. She's not super impressed with the SDF either, so decides she wants to promote the cause of socialism through true working class means. So by 1917, she's identified politically as a communist, and she describes the SDF, and I quote, as practically Tories. Oh. Which is so like the infighting we have today. It's really chilling how nothing ever changes. No. Like, we've still got like misogynist socialists, and we've still got left-wing purity politics, and nothing gets done. Well, not enough is getting done anyway. Now I've just upset everyone, but I stand by it. We need to unite against the bigger evil, people. Question: did she still set up a home with James Sullivan, unmarried?
What has James been up to? Oh, it's only 4 days.
Yeah. All these days.
He's already married another woman. Changes. Oh, I hope so. Yeah.
Well, it would be nice if it was a
happy ending for them.
Also, I hope she takes several lovers and just like, do you know what I mean? Yeah, live your best life.
You do you, girl.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a world full of Seamuses. Yeah. No shame.
Well, you'll be happy to know she does set up a home with him. So Lanchester and Sullivan lived together until his death in 1945 because they are in love.
Oh, 50 years
that's
later.
50 years.
Yeah, it is. It is exactly 50 years. They went on to have two children. Her babies have her surname, Lanchester.
Yes, queen.
Yeah, I know.
What was his surname?
Sullivan.
Okay.
She's higher up the alphabet.
For the register.
The school register. Do you want me to last for everything? Now, so her children, Waldo was born in 1897. Waldo. And then her daughter Elsa was born after that. They're all pacifists, they're all anti-war. In fact, I think Waldo gets arrested at one point for being a conscientious objector.
If I can find him, am I right? That's a joke for our American listeners.
And then he became a puppeteer and a weaver. And then the daughter Elsa Lanchester became a noted actress with a long career in theatre, film and television, and the wife of actor-director Charles Laughton. And they were all political. And Edith Lanchester continued to attend political meetings as long as she was physically active enough to walk to the bus. She died in April 1966 in Brighton.
Wow, what a gal.
I wonder if there's
blue
there's
plaque
gotta
or something.
At least a plaque, if not a big old statue that I don't know about. There must be something.
There must
I will
be.
Get back to you.
Let's raise a glass.
My goodness.
To women's choices.
Louise.
Also, I'm going to pitch the Where's Waldo book of him not going to war called A Waldo. It doesn't work. Does it A Waldo? Okay, it works. Let's do it.
It's good to work through. There's something there. Drunk women
solving crime. Hey, lovely ladies. Recently found you and I'm binge listening. You're welcome. I have never been flashed or jerked off at, maybe because I live in Canberra, Australia. Honestly, a little disappointed as your pod has given me so many great reactions on what to do. Embarrassing the perp is the best option I've heard. I was 22 and a single mum living paycheck to paycheck. My 2-year-old son was at his dad's and I drank far too much with my best friend, as one does. Next day, I got up and went to work as I could at 22. Was still a bit seedy, but I managed a full day at work. After work, I got to the car park and my car was gone. Broken glass where I left it. I rang the cops and then my mate who said we got wasted last night, he probably parked it somewhere else. She came to meet me and proceeded to search the car park while I stood there saying no, it was in this parking spot with my keys in my hand. I was devastated. I couldn't afford another car seat, pram and all the CDs I'd lost to her too. Finally got home, ordered the pizza I desperately needed to soak up the night before vodka and rang my insurance company. Turned out I'd accidentally insured the car for 4 times what I paid for it. No idea how, but then waited for the payout like I'd won the lottery. Still always wondered who stole the car with a toddler seat in it. It just seemed rude.
Yeah.
13 months later, the AFP calls and my car had been found. I went to see it and found a doctor's certificate for a parent missing work due to a sick child. So it was stolen for the car seat. Looked like it had been driven around for 13 months, then dumped. Gave the info to the cops, but never heard more. It made me appreciate that while it was really annoying and upsetting at the time, someone's child needed a car seat. So did the person who needed it steal it, or was it stolen and some person was sold it to the person in need?
Oh, bloody hell. That took a lot. It was a roller coaster, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's like... And that's from Angela.
I would say that it was just stolen and then the car seat was sort of, you know, sold on or...
Okay. You think someone stole it, like, haha, I'm going to get this car, and then later on it helped out a parent.
That's what I wouldn't think somebody...
Somebody's seen Gone in 60 seconds.
I wouldn't think a parent would see a car and think, I really need that car seat, so I'll take the car.
It does. I mean, they're very expensive, but otherwise, yeah. Why would you? That's not your list of top
list
of problems.
That's the easiest way to steal. Probably need the car as well.
Yeah. I don't know.
That letter that was left in the car was obviously belonging to
a parent that had taken time. So an official letter from a doctor giving a parent. Like,
and didn't that not have any details on it? Because it makes me think that a doctor's letter might
yes,
have...
Yes, that's got a name, right?
Maybe.
Yeah, because they gave the details to the police, so yeah.
Yeah.
Or was it a fake and it was just for empathy for anyone who found
yes.
it?
Yes.
Also interesting that, like, 13...
I'd be the worst criminal.
Relying on the
kindness. It's a receipt for pizza because I bought a pizza.
But 13 months later, it's amazing that they were actually sort of, I suppose, not still looking for it, because I guess you just put in a registration number or whatever. Just in terms of the police coming back to her after 13... I mean, did she have to give them four times money
back?
Yeah,
that was my main worry. Like, did she... Of course not. She kept it. That's great.
Yeah, she's got... I mean, she's quits in with the money, which is good.
In fact, was that her letter? And did she, in fact, stage this entire theft to collect the insurance money?
An insurance job.
Ange, if that is your real name.
She's only just started listening and already we're like, did you do it, Ange? Was it you? Angie, I'd like to say sorry on behalf of the drunk women.
I took it too far. It was a cheap laugh and it wasn't worth it.
I don't think her parents stole the car. I think either a criminal that sold it on, or maybe a relative of a parent. Maybe there's a single parent out there that's got, like, I don't know, a brother that's like... doesn't care about laws. It's like, oh, my sister needs a car. She can have that one.
Also, you've got to, like, because if there was glass on the ground, it presumably they got in
They'd
by breaking
smashed,
a window.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes you think that you
not
then...
Not toddler safe.
Well, yeah, you wouldn't then want to put your kid in a car that didn't have a window, perhaps.
Yeah, so they'd have...
So it, maybe it was sort of... What, do you know what I mean?
How else do they stick their heads out of the car? Yeah. Wait. I just can't get past the fact that she's never been wanked at. Like, I haven't moved on from that. Well done. Yeah. I hope you can still say
it's
that.
It's great to hear a happy story.
Yeah, that's a happy story.
Like, I think that's the... That's, I think... That, Jenny, that might be the only woman I know that hasn't happened. There might be one other woman that hasn't happened to that I've met in my real life.
Yeah.
So, well done.
Go Canberra.
Yeah. What respectable men you have in your town. I mean, I think
we pull that back from accusing
that. All right. Wow.
So who did it? Insurance fraud.
I hope.
Thanks
that,
for listening.
I hope that helped, Angela. Thanks for listening, and do send us your crimes, other listeners, please. We would love to solve them, and as you can see, we've gotten pretty good at it. So we have just enough time to ask Brenda Gilhooly, what are you up to? Where can we find you? What do you want to plug?
Well, I've just finished a novel, a comedy
Ooh,
novel.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so...
wow, what's that called?
Well, it's called Millie Liar.
Okay.
And it's a modern Billy Liar. There's a... That, don't you know if you remember, there's sort of a book and a film set in the 60s called Billy Liar.
Yeah.
About a northern... working class boy in a rut who's desperate to get to London, and he's a fantasist and a liar.
Ooh.
So this is a modern version of that called Millie Liar, and it's set in South Croydon, and she's a fantasist and a liar, and she wants to get out of a rut, and it's all about, you know, what's going on for it's it the lead, yeah, she's about 25.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah. So
when's that coming out?
Well, I'm not sure, but But anyway, if everybody's listening to a podcast, then, you know, it might be out but when somebody's listening to it. Yeah.
Listen anytime. So Millie Liar.
Next year, I think.
Brilliant. Mm. Okay, well, we're going to be keeping tabs on that. Yeah.
And we were discussing whether or not you were on Twitter earlier, but we're not sure if you are.
Well, apparently I am. And I didn't
Don't expect a reply.
I am, but yeah, Amanda follows me.
Our producer is going to check.
Yeah. How many followers?
Oh my God, 374
followers. God, I'm amazed. I know people have thousands, but I'm amazed that I've even gotten
374.
Yeah, you're followed by quite a few people I know as well.
Am I?
Well.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I was doing a project and I'm terrible with social media, I don't know any of it. And for the project, they said, you've got to be on Twitter. So I joined it. I was on it for about 3 days and I thought, I can't be doing that.
Oh, you haven't joined it for 3 days.
Can I say when your last tweet was? You retweeted somebody's campaign. Please support this fab Kickstarter campaign. Four kisses, and that was the 18th of November 2016.
So if you want up-to-the-minute information on Millie Liar.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Then,
So if Brenda ever logs back into Twitter, feel free to tweet her.
I should start looking now. Wow. I know, it's terrible.
Well, there
you didn't
we
even
go.
Last as long as Edith lasted in the asylum, and that's Twitter.
But it just remains for me to say thank you so much for joining us, Brenda.
Oh, thank you so much. I've had an absolute ball. It's been great.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman. Music by The Lion and the Wolf. If you would like to, you can follow us on Drunk Women Pod on Twitter. On Facebook and Insta, we are Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. And also, if you have a crime that you would like us to solve, write it on a review on Apple Podcasts as well. Thank you to Acast and thank you for listening. Bye!